James Lamb and Alyssa Shire for petitioner Cynthia Perez-Zamora. We ask the court to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. Ms. Shire will address the CAT claims. I'll tackle asylum and withholding of removal. This court should reverse and remand for two reasons. First, this court's precedents established foundation for gender-based particular social groups. Second, Perez-Zamora's persecution would not have occurred but for her membership in a particular social group, young women without the protection of their parents. Starting on premise one, under Bringus-Rodriguez v. Sessions, membership in a particular social group of gay Mexican men and boys stems in part from its members' exhibition of female secondary sex characteristics. Gender undergirds this court's cognizance of Bringus' sexual orientation base for social group. Similarities between Bringus-Rodriguez and Perez-Zamora abound, such that Bringus-Rodriguez v. Sessions should control the outcome of the present case.
So, Mr. Lamb, let me ask you a question. I read your brief carefully, and it tees off of Bringus-Rodriguez, like as you just started out. But there's been there was a significant opinion by the Ninth Circuit in a case called Diaz-Reynoso versus Barr.
Yes, Your Honor.
How does that change your argument or shape your argument?
Well, Your Honor, Perez-Zamora's persecution would not have occurred but for her membership in a particular social group of young women without the protection of their parents. Under Diaz-Reynoso v. Barr, the idea that the inclusion of persecution in a particular social group definition would act as some sort of poison pill did not, for that court's reasoning, withstand scrutiny. But in the present case, there was never any circularity. Perez-Zamora's trial attorney stated that her particular social group, young women without the protection of their parents, and she stated that twice before the immigration judge on page 130 of the record between lines 12 and 13, and then later on that page in lines 22 through 23. Twice when evaluating Perez-Zamora's proposed particular social group for social distinction and particularity, the IJ referred to that PSG as, you guessed it, young women without the protection of their parents. The notion of there being a longer form of this that included persecution at all was simply an error.
Okay.
The record compels the understanding that Perez-Zamora's proposed particular social group simply didn't include that material. But more to the point, Bringus-Rodriguez v. Sessions shows us a petitioner who was raped, was beaten as a child, suffered all manner of persecution. The same thing was happening with the present petitioner. Both were persecuted through sexual assault and rape as minor children when both applicants were home alone with persecutors. Bringus' abusers threatened to harm his grandmother should he report to authorities. Cynthia understood that if she reported, reprisals against her grandmother and siblings were possible. Cynthia was only attacked by men from her grandmother's neighborhood while she was alone at home, men who knew or had reason to know Cynthia was a young woman without the protection of her parents. It never happened when the parents were in country. It's never happened. In fact, one persecutor, Wilbur Cordova, showed a kind of nonchalance, just a no fear of reprisal whatsoever when years later he approached Cynthia and asked her if she remembered what had happened between the two of them. The point here is that when it comes to protecting women and girls, Guatemala is a failed state. Cynthia's personal experiences, her familial experiences, and the State Department country condition reports all attest to the notion that if you are a minor child without the protection of your parents...
So, you know, I understand all of that, your arguments, but what's at hand here is, did the BIA err? And if so, how did it err? And what do we do?
The BIA's analysis, Your Honor, used an indifference to the possibility that Bringus-Rodriguez v. Sessions would control the present case. Bringus-Rodriguez stands for the proposition that if you happen to be a minor and you undergo this kind of persecution, the expectation that you're going to run off to the authorities and pursue a law enforcement solution to the problem is not what we would expect from a minor child so traumatized. Further, Bringus-Rodriguez stands in the long line of sexual orientation-based particular social groups that themselves use, well, in essence, gender to understand themselves as sexual orientation-based particular social groups. This is Hernandez Montiel v. INS, Reyes-Reyes v. Ashcroft, Ornella Chavez v. Gonzalez, Castro Martinez v. Holder. In each of these cases, the understanding of the members of the particular social group involve gay men who present in part as women. So in essence, the remedy for the present case would be to afford the same understanding that was afforded in Bringas Rodriguez to the present petitioner. The violence is the same for the same purpose. We have direct evidence of the violence in Bringas. The father, between beatings, saying to Bringas, act like a boy, you are not a woman, to maintain his understanding of stratified gender roles. In the present case, we have circumstantial evidence, but we're still talking about depraved male individuals who are seeking out a young girl for sex. As grotesque as that is, it stands under, it is the persecution that you'd want parents to protect a child from. And when these parents were not in country, when they were not available, that made Cynthia Perez Zamora a member of the particular social group of young women without the protection of their parents. Parents,
well, So let me ask you this. Did the BIA error make a legal error? Are you saying it's not supported by substantial evidence? I don't quite understand your argument.
Your Honor, the BIA erred when it was unable or unwilling to apply the holding of Bringas Rodriguez to the present case. The error was the indifference toward using the analytical framework undergone in Bringas. In essence, what Bringas is asking the court to do, what asked the BIA to do, is to look at the IJ's ruling and understand, first, the young women without the protection of their parents with a particular social group, and second, that gender-based particular social groups like that one were cognizable under the definition. That was the error that they made. There was a, you know, basic reasoning error, but this court can address it. There was no circularity here, Your Honor. Again, when the BIA erred, they assumed that because in the second form of this, lines 23 to 23 of page 130 in the record, they assumed that the argument was, I see this persecution, I see violence along with the definition. Definition isn't possible.
Okay, so that the clock sort of is a little messed up, but you're down to you've used your 7 minutes, and so you wanted to share time with your co-counsel.
Yes, correct? Right. Thank you for your help. Okay.
Let's hear from her. We just lost her.
I think she's walking down the hallway. There she is.
Good morning, Mary.
Okay.
Thank you. I'll be discussing the CAT claim today. So I'd like to first say that we'd like the court to reverse and remand for two reasons. First, that both the BIA and the respondent use the improper standard to calculate the risk of torture upon return that the respondent faces. Second, we also ask that the court reverse because the BIA's speculative conclusion lacks basis in the record evidence. Into the first point, the aggregated analysis standard under Quijada Lynch that the court had in 2015 shows that the BIA must use the cumulative risk of all sources of torture upon return that Cynthia faces. Here, the BIA failed to engage in significant record evidence, both Cynthia's credible testimony that the immigration judge found to be credible despite Cynthia's young age, and the country conditions report, which provide objective evidence that further bolsters Cynthia's credible testimony. Diaz Reynoso v. Barr, as Your Honor mentioned earlier, was a recent case, and here the court reversed and remanded a CAT denial because the BIA did not consider all relevant evidence, including country conditions reports. Here the BIA failed to consider country conditions report as well, and the country conditions report outlines the definitive risk of rape and sexual assault that young women and girls like Cynthia face. Second, I'd like to point to the credible testimony and how it must be given sufficient weight once it is deemed credible under this court's decision in Ornelas-Chavez. The BIA failed to give any weight to Cynthia's credible testimony. Her credible testimony described not one, but two sexual assaults that she experienced at the age of 10. It also described a death threat by a gang member who wanted to coerce her into another sexual relationship. This credible testimony was dismissed by both the BIA and the respondent, simply saying that it was speculative. But however, under this court's decision in Ornelas-Chavez, once this testimony is deemed credible, the testimony itself is evidence, as well as all reasonable inferences that we can take from it, and they must be taken as true once the testimony is deemed credible. Here the respondents say... other respondents say that
the- Let me ask you a question, Ms. Shire. As I understand it, one of the things that the BIA said was that none of this was reported to the local police. Is that right? So she, how old was she at the time of all the, that these incidents took place?
10 for the first rape and the attempted rape, and then she was 14 with the death threat.
So how should that factor into the analysis of whether she was obligated to report to the police?
Under the CAT consideration, because it is trying to protect petitioners from torture, which often happens at the hands of government, there is no reporting requirement, which this court also, reiterated in Bringas-Rodriguez. So despite the fact that she did not tell anyone because she was so afraid, which she describes in her credible testimony, that shouldn't affect the analysis at all. We can't expect a 10-year-old girl whose family members have had really negative experiences reporting violent incidences to the police, we can't expect her herself to go ahead and tell the police when she's afraid of reprisal. In her testimony, she talked about the fact that it's well known in her community that the police do not do anything to report or to investigate or solve violent crimes or really crimes of any kind.
So let me ask you this. So did the BIA make an error of law in your view, or is this decision not supported by substantial evidence on this point because it her age in the analysis?
Your Honor, I would argue both. So first, they used the improper standard. They did not use the aggregated analysis where they assessed each source of torture cumulatively. And then second, as to the substantial evidence, they also failed to consider record evidence that is really important for Cynthia's case. They failed to consider her credible testimony, and they absolutely omitted any discussion of country conditions report. They merely say Guatemala is trying to protect women, which is an insufficient analysis under this court's precedent in Diaz-Reynoso. I'd also like to turn to our other point, which is that Cynthia's testimony, despite being deemed credible, the BIA concluded that the testimony was speculative. However, again, this is an error because her testimony is backed up by both the finding of credibility, which means we must take it as record evidence, as well as the inferences as true. And we also must engage with the country conditions report. So here the BIA failed to do both of those things. If they had done those, I would have a basis to see that her testimony is not speculative, is in fact backed up by objective record evidence as contained in the country conditions report. So for these reasons, we ask that the court reverse and remand using the proper analysis, the aggregated analysis of the cumulative risks of all torture upon return that Cynthia faces when she returns to Guatemala. If this court would consider that, that's all we have for this court. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. And now we'll hear from the government.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, Andrew Nsinga on behalf of the Attorney General. Recognizing that victims of crime are often not going to be eligible for asylum or related protection, petitioners often craft random and ever-morphing particular social groups to try to dovetail into a protected ground. In many cases, and here, however, the record evidence simply doesn't compel reversal agency's findings on nexus, cognizability, unwilling or able to control, or acquiescence. As petitioner says, these are depraved male individuals, but their depravity and the vileness of the crime doesn't change evidentiary requirements or legal requirements. First, on nexus, the record doesn't compel reversal because petitioner must show evidence, must actually point to evidence in the record that compels the conclusion that these depraved individuals didn't act just simply because they're depraved, but because they wanted to overcome the trait or had some animus towards the trait. The opening brief doesn't discuss any evidence. In the reply brief, there's one piece of evidence, and that's the only piece of evidence petitioner has ever presented to this court to claim compels reversal. But it's essentially a non sequitur. It says that one of the criminals asked if she remembered what happened. That's it. It's nasty. It's malicious. But how does in any way, when a criminal goes to a victim of any crime, he says, do you remember what happened? What does that tell us about motive? Nothing. What does it tell her? Perhaps she has a particular religion. Perhaps she has she's in a sewing group. Perhaps it tells us nothing about whether he was motivated or they were motivated to overcome that protected trait.
So let me ask you, does your nexus argument hinge on an assumption that she stated a proper social group, even assuming she's got a proper social group?
No, Your Honor, it doesn't hinge on there being a proper social group at all. You could, petitioners, as I said, there's an ever-morphing social group. You could cut off the circular part as defined. Petitioners then tried to add on Guatemalan as a narrowing factor. Then the reply brief has taken that back off. There's an equal protection argument about female children that are raped because of their appearance. Of course, that was never presented to the agency. The thing is, there's no evidence. Where is evidence that the petitioner, that these depraved individuals wanted to overcome or were motivated by animus towards that group? Where is evidence? Regardless of how we define, even as it's changed over time, there's no evidence to support.
So your argument is simply that she was just the object of violence.
Well, that's all the record evidence.
So she was found credible, and she said that she was raped. Justified that she was raped. So
she was found credible, and she was a victim of a crime. But as I was often
no, it's a pretty serious crime.
Absolutely. Serious as I mean, there is.
And your argument is that it was just part of general violence, or just some depraved individual that.
As petitioner just said, these are depraved male individuals. That's petitioner's own argument. And the government agrees, these are depraved male individuals. But what petitioner has to present to the agency is record evidence that those depraved individuals are motivated by something than mere criminal motivation.
Well, if you accept her social group, young women without the protection of their parents, is that how she framed it?
Well, what was phrased in the agency that petitioner wants to avoid is the only one that's before the court, is young women without the protection of the parents, which then made her a target, which, of course, on its face is circular, which is why petitioner wants to change it.
So let me ask you this. So how does our recent case of Diaz-Reynoso fit into this analysis, which the BIA didn't have at the time it handed down its opinion?
Well, for Nexus, it says nothing. Diaz-Reynoso is purely about cognizability. So for Nexus, it's irrelevant. What petitioner has to present to this court is evidence that these criminals were motivated by. On cognizability, it doesn't change the analysis either. First of all, the social group is the one presented to the agency. That's Honcharov. The agency cannot simply take over control of how petitioner presents her case. Petitioner was
no. I'm not quarreling with that. I agree with you that our case law recognizes that the particular social group must be presented to the agency, and the agency must have a chance to evaluate it and determine whether or not it's cognizable. But we've come along. You know, we came along after the AG's opinion. Was it AB or what's the name of that case?
Correct, Your Honor. Matter of AB.
Yeah, Matter of AB, and we came around and we sort of gave some meaning to it.
Well, Matter of AB is
regarding circularity.
Well, the court in Diaz-Reynoso recognized that circularity has been a concept since 2006 in Matter of CA. In fact, Diaz-Reynoso only undermines petitioner's argument because Diaz-Reynoso says, "Well, yeah, circularity has been an issue for a long time." The only error that the agency found was that Matter of AB found a particular social group was not cognizable, and the board didn't do a sufficient analysis because the groups are so similar. But given the agency didn't have AB, and this group, the group currently composed of the court, isn't the subject of any published precedent, the agency necessarily had to do that case-by-case analysis. And here, it's not particularly complicated, because on its face, the one presented to the agency is that which then made her a target. Diaz-Reynoso does not help petitioner in any way. To go briefly on to the unwilling, unable to control on Diaz-Reynoso, Diaz-Reynoso doesn't help petitioner either, for either CAT or unwilling, able to control. The only issue in CAT was that the agency, the government, agreed to remand because that petitioner reported the crimes to people with some authority in her community. Now, that's not required, but the agency didn't consider it, and the government said that had to be remanded. That was the issue in Diaz-Reynoso. So we don't have that in this case.
Yeah, but Diaz-Reynoso says that just because there's some persecution or some harm is wrapped into the proposed social group, that doesn't preclude finding that the proposed group is a cognizable group, because you have to look at whether you have to sort of cut out the persecution and look at the proposed group and ask whether or not that group is meets the test for a particular social group, social distinction, and the other factors as well.
Well, with all due respect, Your Honor, the court never said the Israelis know, so that the job of the agency is to cut out the section that is deemed improper.
Well, I understand Diaz Reynoso saying that just because there's some harm or persecution is tied to the definition or to the proposed social group, that doesn't preclude finding of a particular social group.
It doesn't preclude finding,
right?
But the crux of Diaz Reynoso, the primary holding, is that circularity has been and is a proper consideration. Now, does it preclude absolutely? No. You have to look at it in a case-by-case analysis. And that's all the error that was found in Diaz Reynoso. And that's what the agency conducted. Her claim before the agency was that made her a target, and that group being made her a target. That was baked into the definition presented to the agency. Now, again, the ever-morphing particular social groups that the court presented, whether it's in equal protection or in a reply, only highlight the failure.
So when I read that passage in the decision, both the BIA and the IJ's decision, it was like counsel was saying, "This is the proposed social group which rendered her a target."
That would be a fine argument for petitioner to have presented to the agency. But what then we need to look at then is the appeal brief to the board. The agency, the immigration judge specifically quoted that section exactly. Petitioner's reply brief to the agency, to the board, says nothing about, well, that was just an explanation. It's not an unreasonable explanation. It's a possible argument. But here we are years later, and what we are is reviewing the agency's decision based on the claim presented to the agency, not on a new social group or a new argument years later down the road. We're reviewing the agency's decision. The agency doesn't err and say, well, this is how you defined it, and then petitioner never says, no, that's not what I meant. That's what petitioner said to the agency, and that's what we're with. On unwilling or unable to control, as well as sort of acquiescence, I think first on CAT, you know, it needs to be addressed. Petitioner often talks about this aggregate issue. Aggregate deals with the likelihood of torture. But when we look at the agency's decisions, the agency didn't deny because of likelihood. There's two requirements, likelihood and acquiescence. The agency talked about acquiescence. So petitioner's argument simply misses the mark. It has no relevance to the agency's actual finding.
So what do we do with her age?
Well, the agency, the immigration judge obviously recognized she's young, but Bringas Rodriguez doesn't establish any definitive rule that that we simply ignore we ignore the lack of evidence because of her age. It's fine.
I guess I should have been more specific. She didn't, nobody reported these incidents to the local police or whatever might exist in her community. Can you reasonably expect a 10-year-old or 14-year-old to walk down to the police department and say, "Hey, I was raped. Here's who did it."
Well, part of the discussion was, even after petitioner's parents found out about this situation, was there a report? The answer was no. But a lot of this really is sort of just a sideshow, because what petitioner showed is, where is the evidence compelling reversal? Point to evidence. Now, petitioner says, well, I have an opinion that the police won't do anything. But as an AR-127, that's what she says. And the reason is, well, my sister was attacked with her boyfriend on a motorcycle. They went to the police, and the police were like, well, who did it? And the sister said, I don't know. Now, petitioner is allowed to have an opinion. And petitioner is credible. But credibility does not equal sufficiency. We don't tell the jury, if you find this person credible, you must find what they say sufficient. Now, what petitioner doesn't do is actually address the country reports. Now, petitioner talks all right to the board to talk about the country reports. Okay, where in the country reports does it show that the government's unwilling or unable to control crime or childhood rape? Point to evidence that compels reversal. That's what the petitioner has to do. And at no point has petitioner said, this is that evidence. This is that evidence and compels reversal. The only cite, finally, in the reply brief is to page AR-168. And they argue, well, that says the San Marcos police don't do anything. Except when you actually read AR-168, the only reference to San Marcos police is no reference to San Marcos police. The only reference to San Marcos is that it has a high rate of unplanned pregnancies among teens. Unfortunate, but it doesn't tell us anything about how San Marcos police behave, or whether it be unable or unwilling or unable to control crime, or whether they acquiesce. Again, it's much like the site that the criminal said that he asked if she remembered the crime. It's simply logically irrelevant. What we need, again, is regardless of age, we need evidence. Now, petitioner can talk all wants vaguely about the country reports, but point to evidence that compels reversal. The petitioner hasn't done that on either three issues for asylum withholding or for cap protection. And we ask that the court deny the petition.
Okay. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Okay, Mr. Lamb.
Thank you, Your Honor.
You reserved 3 minutes for rebuttal, so I'll give you 3 minutes on the clock.
Appreciate it. I have 2 points, and Ms. Shai will have one. First, evidence. There is ample evidence in the record that compels reversal. First, we have evidence that Walford, one of the persecutors, walked across the yard weeks after the first incident. Two, Wilbur Cordova approaching Tishner later on in the situation, years later, to ask about their previous tryst. Three, only when the parents were gone, never before, did these incidents occur. Four, these incidents occurred in the home. Men from the neighborhood infiltrated the yard. They walked across the yard. They walked up to petitioner while she's washing dishes or while she was asleep in her own bed upstairs. The point here is that this PSG was defined without harm. The IJ discussed it without harm. The government lawyer at the time on page 131 of the record did not respond with any conversations on circularity or missing the harm in evidence. And the circularity argument that was made is a misparsing of the record. In essence, the BIA's understanding of circularity in this is the problem, not the evidence itself. The government suggested a minute or two ago that you have to use the record as it is, and he's correct. And the record shows the second form of the PSG stated as follows: young women without the protection of their parents, which made her a target, and as a result, she was raped. However, the government can't read past its own typography. Periods are used between the harm and the PSG. So even with the understanding from Diaz Reynoso that even mentioning at all the persecution is not a poison pill, we're still left with the fact that there was no circularity present in this case. None. The BIA just misunderstood that, and the government is misunderstanding it now.
Okay.
Ms. Shire? Oh, I'm sorry, Your Honor. Did you have a question?
No, Ms. Shire.
Your Honor, I just have one point. Again, respondent points out there is no evidence of Cynthia's risk of torture upon return. Again, this is a misreading of the record. There is evidence that both the BIA and the respondent completely failed to engage, which is the death threat from the gang member who wanted to enter into sexual slavery. There is immigration judge level, at the BIA level, at the respondent's brief level. Absolutely not. That's a critical piece of evidence that goes towards her risk of torture upon return. As for the aggregate is the total amount evaluating all sources. It cannot have been done here. One of the sources is missing. The death threat from the gang member is a source of Cynthia's possible torture upon return. It must be remanded and reversed so that the BIA and immigration judge can actually look at this piece of evidence, which is in the record, that counts, that our respondent does not engage with at all in his brief either. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Chair. And thank you, counsel. We appreciate your arguments today. And we, on behalf of the court, we'd like to thank the clinic and the law school at Irvine for their willingness to take on cases out of our pro bono program. So thank you all very much. That concludes our session for this case. It's submitted at this time.